And behold, on that very day, two of them were going to a village named Emmaus, which was 60 stadia from Jerusalem. And they were talking with each other about these things which had taken place. While they were talking and discussing, Jesus himself approached and began traveling with them, but their eyes were prevented from recognizing him. And he said to them, "What are these words that you are exchanging with one another as you are walking?" And they stood still, looking sad. And one of them, named Cleopas, answered and said to him, "Are you the only one visiting Jerusalem and unaware of the things which have happened here in these days?" And he said to them, "What things?" And they said to him, "The things about Jesus the Nazarene, who is a prophet mighty in deed and word in the sight of God and all the people, and how the chief priests and our rulers delivered him to the sentence of death and crucified him. But we were hoping that it was he who was going to redeem Israel. Indeed, besides all this, it is the third day since these things happened. But also some women among us amazed us when they were at the tomb early in the morning and did not find his body. They came saying that they had seen a vision of angels who had said that he was alive. Some of those who were with us went to the tomb and found it exactly as the women also had said, but him they did not see. And Jesus said to them, "O foolish men and slow of heart to believe in all that the prophets have spoken. Was it not necessary for the Christ to suffer these things and to enter into his glory?" Then beginning with Moses and with all the prophets, he explained to them the things concerning himself in all the scriptures. And they approached the village where they were going. And he acted as though he was going farther, but they urged him, saying, "Stay with us, for it is getting toward evening, and the day is now nearly over." And so he went in to stay with them. When he'd reclined at the table with them, he took the bread and blessed it, and breaking it, he began giving it to them. Then their eyes were opened, and they recognized him, and he vanished from their sight. They said to one another, "Were not our hearts burning within us while he was speaking to us on the road, while he was explaining the scriptures to us?" And they got up that very hour and returned to Jerusalem and found gathered together the 11 and those who were with them, saying, "The Lord has really risen and appeared to Simon." They began to relate their experiences on the road and how he was recognized by them in the breaking of bread. May God bless the reading of God's word.
Good morning. So in many church traditions on Easter morning, what happens is the person up front says, "He is risen." And everyone else says, "He is risen." He is risen. And the question that I want to ask for us this morning is, what is he doing now that he is risen? Have you ever asked that question? Like, what is that guy up to? Seriously. We believe that Jesus bodily raised from the dead and that he is presently alive. And the question that I want us to consider this morning, and I want to invite you to consider, not just now, but for the rest of your life, is what is he doing? There's a man named Paul Kingsnorth, who is an essayist and a poet living in the west of Ireland. And in an essay entitled "The Cross in the Machine," he tells a story of how he, a middle-aged Zen Buddhist Englishman, who was also a Wiccan priest, ended up encountering Jesus, converting to Christianity, and landing in an Orthodox Christian church. After years of Buddhist meditation and a decade or more of feeling completely drawn into what he describes as a religious experience that he found in the woods and among the mountains and nature, he began to try to make sense of the fact that everything that he had tried left him wanting. It was like he was on this search for what he knew to be sort of right under his nose, but he could never seem to find something deep inside of him that would satisfy the thing that he was looking for. And so on this journey, he felt as though he had found God in nature and in the woods. And so looking for a nature religion, he turned to the occult tradition where he and others would perform rituals in the woods under a full moon. He says this, he says, "At last I felt like I was home, where I belonged, in the woods, worshiping a nature goddess under the stars. I even got to wear a cloak," he writes. "Everything seemed to have fallen into place until I started having dreams." And he goes on in this essay to say that he had had a dream about Jesus, and it was a really simple dream. Jesus came to him in the middle of the night and said to him, "I am the next step on your spiritual journey." And listen, guys, he did not believe that this was true. He didn't want it to happen. He had no interest in Christianity. But what was a little unsettling to him was that just a month prior to this moment, he and his wife were out to dinner, and out of the blue, she is also not a believer, by the way. Out of the blue, she says to him, "I think you're going to become a Christian." And he says back to her, "Why would you say that?" And she's like, "I don't know. It's just a feeling that I have been having, and I feel like I can't help but just say it out loud to you. I think you're going to become a Christian." And if you will permit me just a bit, I know that's a little unconventional to read a story of an essay on Easter morning, but I'm going to do it anyway. A little bit from this essay. This is after the dream and after his wife had said this to him. He says this. He says, "Suddenly I started meeting Christians everywhere. They were coming out of the woodwork. Strangers emailing me out of the blue, priests coming to me for help with their writing. I found myself having conversations with friends I'd never known were Christians who suddenly seemed to want to talk about it. An African man contacted me on Facebook to tell me that he had had a dream in which God had told him to convert me. 'If you want to know God,' he told me, 'you need to read the book that he wrote. You know it already. It's called Nature.' It kept happening for months, Christ to the left of me, Christ to the right. It was a little unnerving. I turned away again and again, but every time I looked back, he was still there. And I began to feel that I was being hunted. I wanted it to stop. At least I thought I did. I had no interest in Christianity. I was a witch. A Zen witch, in fact, which I thought sounded pretty darned edgy. But I knew who was after me, and I knew it wasn't over. One evening, I was sitting in the kitchen of the house in which our coven, that is what a Wiccan small group is called, it's called a coven. One evening, I was sitting in the kitchen of the house in which our coven had its temple, and we were about to go in and conduct a really important ritual. And as I got up to leave, I felt violently ill. I was dizzy, I was sick, I was lightheaded. Everyone noticed and fussed over me. As I sat down, my face pale, I had an overpowering feeling that I should not go to the temple. I felt that I was being physically prevented from doing it. Someone had staged an intervention." In John's gospel, when Jesus foretells his death, he says, "And if I am lifted up from the earth, I will draw all of the humans to myself. I will draw all the humans to myself." And John goes on to tell us that Jesus says this to indicate the kind of death that he would undergo. That Christ on the cross is lifted up, and that Christ on the cross will draw all humans to himself. And so we know, and what the English Wiccan priests found out eventually, is that the work that Jesus is presently doing is he is staging an intervention in the life of every human being. He is drawing us to himself. And my guess is that you are here on Easter morning because you have some version of the story that I began with. And maybe you haven't had a dream where you were visited by Jesus. I mean, wouldn't that be amazing? Has anyone had a dream? Never mind, we're not going to do that. And maybe somebody didn't randomly blurt out to you that God was coming for you, and maybe you are still in the process of trying to figure out how you might want to orient your life to the teachings of Jesus and to God. Maybe that God is slowly still drawing you, dragging you, if you will, but in this journey of being drawn by the one and only God who entered death to conquer death, and was raised up from the dead to bring life to me and you and all of the humans, the way that we are being drawn and what is happening to us as we are being drawn is really important for us to consider. What is Jesus up to is the question that I want to think about with you this morning on Easter. The one who is drawing you and dragging you to himself is the same one who was crucified. It's the same one who traveled down to the depths of the earth. It's the same one who conquered the enemy for all time. And this is the one who is now staging an all of history and all of creation intervention. And whether or not you know it or realize it, he is coming after you. And you are being caught up in it. And my hope for us this morning is that you and I could allow the intervention to be revealed to us in ways that we haven't yet seen, that we could be reminded of the story that we are part of, and that we could be remembered to one another. Something is happening to us. We are being drawn. The one that is doing that work is Christ. And in the end, there is really only one thing required of us. So that's where we're headed this morning. Those of you who love a little bit of a roadmap, particularly on an Easter morning, here's where we're headed. God's intervention in three parts: revealing, reminding, and remembering. And listen, I'm not much of a three-point alliterated sermon guy, but it is Easter morning, and you give the people what they want, right? So first, revealing. Our teaching passage this morning comes from the Gospel of Luke, and we come into the resurrection story in a spot that feels like a little bit after the climax of the story. The way that the Gospel writer Luke writes the story of the resurrection is that there's this resurrection scene that we're looking at this morning happens a few hours after the very big event. So Matthew's gospel centers the resurrection story on the joy and the celebration of the moment and the mission that begins to flow out of that. And John's gospel lingers a bit and tells the story of Jesus meeting Mary Magdalene at the tomb and comforting her in the midst of her grief. But Luke immediately tells us where Jesus has run off to and what he begins to do. We're left in Luke's gospel with a resurrection story where Peter begins to go home and wonders where Jesus might be. And Luke tells us that Jesus gets to work. He's with these two travelers. And they're probably a husband and wife couple who are making their way back to their hometown after spending a week in Jerusalem for the Passover feast. They had lots of people had been traveling to Jerusalem to celebrate this feast. But what they realize as the events unfolded throughout the week is that the person that that they had heard of and seen miracles from, and the one that they put their hope in, and the one that healed people of their deformities so that they could re-enter into the temple, this person, this prophet, Jesus, was executed by crucifixion, and now his body is missing, and all of the disciples are hiding out, and everyone is completely confused. Has anyone ever been confused in their life with Jesus? I just want to confess to you that I experienced a tremendous amount of confusion in following Jesus over the course of the last 30 years or so. I'm going to pick up in verse 13. Behold, on that very day, two of them were going to a village named Emmaus, which was 7 miles from Jerusalem, and they were talking with each other about all of the things that had taken place. While they were talking and discussing, Jesus himself approached and began traveling with them, but their eyes were kept from recognizing him. That's interesting. Their eyes were kept from recognizing him. The same thing happened to Mary Magdalene when she met Jesus in John's gospel. I'm just going to read just a bit from John 20. Just stay with me here for a second. It says, Mary was standing outside the tomb. This is just on the morning of Easter. And as she wept, she stooped and looked into the tomb, and she saw two angels in white sitting, one at the head and one at the feet where the body of Jesus had been lying. And they said to her, "Woman, why are you weeping?" And she said to them, "Because they have taken away my Lord, and I do not know where he has been." And when she said this, she turned around and saw Jesus standing there and did not know that it was Jesus. Isn't this an interesting fact that both gospel writers are telling stories of people who do not recognize him at first, but then later recognize him? Mary began to recognize Jesus because she first thought he was the gardener. And then he looks at her and says, "Mary." And then her eyes are open. She sees him for who he is and for what he is. And the same thing is happening in Luke's gospel with these two travelers. So Mary didn't recognize Jesus at first. And this begs one of the questions that this text sort of begs for me. If you're anything like me, one of the next questions that I'm asking from this text is that if these two travelers, less than 48 hours after seeing Jesus in the flesh, don't have eyes to see God in flesh in front of them, what hope do I have of encountering the presence of God in my own life? If they can't see it, how am I going to see it? So Jesus kept walking with him. I'm not going to give you an answer to that question, by the way. It's just there for you. Jesus kept walking with them and heard them describe the hope that they had lost and the confusion that they felt that they had been caught up in. And going on to verse 26, Jesus says, "Was it not necessary for the Christ to suffer these things and to enter into his glory?" And then beginning with Moses and with all of the prophets, he explained to them the things concerning himself from the scriptures. And so he took them through the scriptures and explained to them how God's plan all along was for God to be present to those who suffer and for God to become someone who does suffer. And as they continued walking, the couple's hearts began to burn within them because they didn't know it, but Jesus was about to stage an intervention. They invite Jesus to stick around for dinner. And when he had reclined at the table with them, he took the bread and he blessed it. And breaking it, he began giving it to them. And then their eyes were opened and they recognized him. Because on the night that Jesus was betrayed, he took the bread and he blessed it and he broke it. And he said that this is my body that has been broken for you. And later on that same night, he took the cup and he said to them, "This is a new covenant which is found in my blood, which is being shed for you." The reason that the two travelers with Jesus were not able to recognize him was that they didn't have an imagination yet for how the cross fit into the picture of the story that they thought that they were living in. And once the scriptures were opened and they could see the story that was always going to climax in suffering and then glory, and once the bread was broken and their attention was taken back to the cross, they were able to understand what was slowly being revealed to them all along, that God has always been trying to reveal his love. The only thing that this book is about, it's a lot of pages. Have you tried to read this thing? The only thing this is about is the very slow way in which God has been revealing his love to the humans over time. The Apostle Paul writes a letter to the Romans and says that God demonstrates his own love towards us in that while we were sinners, Christ died for us. Or as Catholic writer Frederick Bearschmidt says, God befriends us even when our failings should make us God's enemies. You are not an enemy of God. You never have been an enemy of God. Wherever you are on your journey of being drawn, it's happening, by the way. It's going to happen to you. Wherever you are in being drawn to Jesus, you have never been an enemy of God. Because the demonstration of who God is and what God is like is God on a cross pouring out his love into the world. One of the things I love about this Emmaus Road story is that we all have seasons in our life where things do not make sense. I want you to think, just take a moment of reflection. We do a lot of reflection here at Central Vineyard. Take a moment to reflect on a season where this story has not made a ton of sense to you. You might find yourself in that season right now. That there's some loss that is unfolding in your life. There's some frustration. There's some hurt. There's some pain. There's some unanswered questions. I want to invite you to reorient your understanding towards the cross. The way that God befriends us is he gives his life for our life. The Apostle Paul says that Jesus is the very image of a God who is invisible, which means that this human on a cross, full of love and forgiveness, who calls us his friends, this is what God is like. I don't know what your image of God is. We all come to Easter morning with some picture of who we think God might be. And this is the one that we're invited to consider. That this is what God is like. And everything that Jesus is now doing is trying to reveal to you that this is what God is like. So what is the risen Jesus doing right now? The risen Jesus right now is drawing you to himself. He is working to intervene in your life and in my life, and one of the ways that he is doing that is through slowly revealing the way that he is loving you. And this is the primary picture. But friends, let me just tell you, there are an infinite number of ways that God is presently pouring out his love to you into your heart through the Holy Spirit. Infinite number of ways. And the invitation is for us to pay attention. God, how are you revealing your love to me? The primary picture that he wants to put in front of us is a picture of himself on the cross. And in the midst of all of the other questions that you might be holding about Jesus or about the scriptures or about what it means to live in this world with this culture and all of the questions that it comes up and brings up for us, all of the things that can cloud the vision of the story, the primary thing that Jesus is doing is working to reveal to you and I that who God is and what God is like. And both of those questions are revealed to us with the image of God on a cross giving his life to us. And this has the power to rescue us and redeem us and to bring us into peace with God. This is what the love of God looks like when it is revealed. So he's doing this work of revealing, but he's also at work reminding us of the way that he has been loving us. So not only is he trying to uncover for us, But then he is reminding us of how he has been loving us from the beginning. So Jesus is traveling with them. And he's revealing to them through the scriptures all the ways that God has been staging this intervention. And he's explaining to them how it was always part of the story for God to identify himself with the humans. And so as the resurrected Jesus makes his way through the scriptures, he's reminding them that this is a theme of God joining himself to the experience of the humans, particularly to the experience of the ones who have been suffering. This has been going on the entire time. A few weeks ago, my family took me out for my birthday. It was my birthday a couple weeks ago. Oh, thank you. Thank you so much. our oldest, Rayleigh, who's at Ohio State, joined us, and we, of course, went to the North Star Cafe, which seems to be the only thing we were ever able to choose. So we went to dinner, we came back to the house, and we all found ourselves on the couch, and we were working our way, holding an iPad, we were working our way through the handful of the 20,000 or so pictures that are uploaded to the cloud from the past in our family. I don't know how we got here on the couch looking at family photos. You ever have those moments where you just pick up and you find yourself 15 years ago and all of the memories are flooding back? And we went through some videos and we laughed as hard as I think we've ever laughed together. And as we made our way through the videos over the course of those years, the videos and the stories that were unfolding in the videos reminded us of each of those seasons. And so there were videos of chickens in our backyard like 12 years ago, and I remember it took me back to the season of my life where I was really in touch with the soil and with food, and I had turned my small little Clintonville lawn into an urban farm. What was I thinking? I just have no idea. We lingered as part of that season, and I recognized that I'm no longer in that season. I'm not an urban farmer anymore. But I was once captivated by food and how it has grown and the beauty of retrieving eggs first thing in the morning. Like, these memories begin to flood back for me. We flipped through other images, and I noticed that I pretty quickly skipped over an image of one of our girls sleeping on the couch. And it seemed like a fairly innocuous image, but I remember taking that particular picture. It was a picture of one of my daughters who had just had a seizure. And I was reminded, oh yeah, that's part of our story too. And in that one image, 100 other memories came flooding back. But what I was also becoming aware of as we sort of lingered in that season of life, I learned in that season about the Father's love and about prayer and about the power healing of God. And then we swiped through another video from 10 years ago, and we were reminded of the silliness and the creativity and the beauty of that particular day in that particular season, and now we were back to laughter. Do you guys know this is how, like, flipping through stories and memories works? We're taken back to these moments. And listen, we're never able to fully capture all of the things that make up our family. We could have 50,000 images and videos, and it would never capture who we are together. But we have more than enough moments to go back to and return to when we want to be reminded of the life that we have been making together for so long. Verse 27, and beginning with Moses and with all of the prophets, he explained to them the things concerning himself in the scriptures. We will never be able to write down all of the things that God has done in the world. In fact, one of the gospel writers even says this. I could go on, but it would take forever to say. We will never be able to know all the ways that God has been loving you or all of the things that God is presently doing right now to mend that broken relationship or to heal that infertility in your life or to at least give you the ability to be present to God while you walk through that or to pour out wisdom in your mind for the work that is ahead of you or to soften your heart to forgiveness. towards the person that has harmed you and hurt you. We will never be able to capture all of that. But what I find fascinating is that the one of the first things that Jesus did when he came up from the grave is he opened up the scriptures with a couple of people who were struggling to make sense of the story, and he begins to remind them of all of the ways that God has been present through time, through the prophets. In the second century, there's a really beautiful community that emerged of what is often referred to as the Johannine tradition. And all that means is that the gospel writer John didn't just write a gospel and sort of was like, that was my contribution to Christianity. He formed a community around him, and they began to practice the way of Jesus together. And in this particular community of John, John had an apprentice named Polycarp, and then Polycarp had his own disciple, and his disciple was named Melito, and Melito was a leader in the church in an area called Sardis, okay? And just in the past 50 or so years, we've actually gained access to some of Melito's writings that have been made available. And in a sermon that he gave to his community as part of their Passover and Easter celebration, Melito says this: if you wish to see the mystery of the Lord, look at Abel, who was likewise slain, at Isaac, who was likewise tied up, at Joseph, who was likewise traded, at Moses, who was likewise exposed, at David, who was likewise hunted down, at the prophets who likewise suffer for the sake of Christ. Friends, the scriptures are like memories of God's faithfulness, and part of what the risen Jesus right now is doing in your life is he is bringing you to the memory of his faithfulness in your life. He's wanting to remind you of his love and presence all throughout your life in ways that you may not even be aware of. The scriptures are God's faithfulness to other people. But the way that they're meant to function in our life is like those moments when we're trying to remember a song and we have just like the first few bars of the song in our mind, but we can't quite get the rest of it. You guys ever have this moment? And then we turn to our friend and you're like, how does that song go? And the friend begins to hum it, and then the whole song begins to rush back into your mind. If we are unable to remember the goodness and the presence of God in our own life, one of the things that we can do is that we can turn to the risen Jesus who is alive and ask him to take us through the scriptures to find a few bars of a melody that might be similar to the thing that we are facing. We can read stories of God's faithfulness in the midst of famine, or presence to the ones neglected or the broken, or the way that God turns the plans of the enemies into material that he can work with in our lives. And the melodies of these stories begin to resonate with the things that we are facing. How many of you have had a moment where you find a melody here that begins to resonate with what's happening here? That is one of the things that the risen Jesus is presently doing in your life right now. He wants to remind you of the faithfulness that he has had to you and to your story. And finally, the risen Jesus is drawing us to himself through the work of remembering. Remembering. So the two travelers, they've been eating with Jesus, and when he broke the bread and handed it to them, verse 32, they said to one another, were not our hearts burning within us while he was speaking to us on the road, while he was explaining the scriptures to us? And they got up that very hour, and they returned to Jerusalem, and they found gathered together the 11 and those who were with them. And they began to relate their experience on the road and how he was recognized by them in the breaking of bread. The first thing they do when they see Jesus is they go back to their community. They go back to their people. And they begin to talk about what Jesus had begun to stir up in their life, how he had revealed to them the climax of the Creator's love pouring out into the world, and then how he opened up the scriptures and reminded them that this was the way that he had been doing it all along. So friends, when it's just the two of them on the road, they're sort of lost and discouraged and hopeless. And then Jesus joins them into that moment. And what do? They say, we have to go back to our people. They immediately get up and they go 7 miles journey back. So that's a 14-mile hike in one particular day. It's part of the way that God is drawing you to himself. The risen Jesus is among community. And listen, friends, I suspect that there are some of you here that haven't yet come back to community. And I just want to invite you back. The church is a giant place. The purpose of God is to form a new humanity, and he is inviting you back into that. And so I'm using the word remember, not in a way that relates to memory, but in a way that relates to being a part of something that is whole. So the membership in the group that they were a part of fell off because what they had hoped in together, they thought, was basically falling apart. And now that they have hope again, they are remembered back to the community where in a matter of 40 days, the Holy Spirit is going to come and birth the church, which you and I are now a part of. So friends, Jesus is alive. He is staging an intervention in your life. And the way he is doing that is to reveal to you the love of God, to remind you of the presence of God in your life from the very beginning, and to remember you to one another and to community. This is how God is drawing you to himself. And there's only one thing that's required of you. You ready for it? It's called surrender. That's the only thing that you have to do. Catholic writer Ronald Rollheiser says this. He says, the gospel is not as much about worthiness as it is about surrender. What God wants from us is not a million acts of virtue, but a million acts of surrender, culminating in one massive surrender of soul, mind, and body. When we have given up everything and are completely helpless to give ourselves anything, as we will all eventually be when we face death, then salvation can be given to us. So I want to just close with a couple of reflections here. Revealing, reminding, and remembering, what is the thing that you feel like you need the most right now? Do you feel like the thing you most need Jesus to do for you is to reveal something to you, to give you a revelation of the way he's at work in your life, a revelation of his love? Do you feel like maybe the thing you most need right now is to be reminded of his faithfulness and his presence? Or do you feel like the most thing that you need right now is to be remembered to a people? And so we're always going to make space and time to pray for people. And as we welcome the kids back in, kids, we want to welcome you. I want to invite you to go ahead and stand. The worship team is going to come back up. As we head into worship, the invitation I want to extend to you is to think about three particular prayers. As this room fills up, three prayers I want to offer you. Reveal to me your love, Lord. Reveal to me your love. Remind me of who you are, Lord. And remember me to your family. Reveal to me your love. Remind me of who you are and remember me to your family. Friends, we'll have some folks up here in the corners to pray for you. If you'd like to receive prayer this morning, we want to welcome you into worship.